morning and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our conversations include you. And if you'd like to join us tonight, you might want to jot down our numbers. 941-3689 is the number if you're calling us from Oahu and from the neighbor islands or anywhere else that you may be listening to us, possibly to the live stream. 877-941-3689 is the number to call. For years, we were warned that Hawaii was due for a hurricane. Almost 2 weeks ago, Tropical Storm Isel made that warning a reality. The storm made landfall on the east coast of Hawaii Island. Puna took the biggest hit. Ulapalakua and Hana on Maui also saw damage. Power lines came down. Some are still down. We learned what overturned albizia trees could do. Emergency aid agencies brought water, ice, and food to those in need. This week, FEMA representatives made their assessment of the destruction, and today, Governor Abercrombie signed the request for a presidential disaster declaration, asking for federal assistance to help pay for all of that damage. Meanwhile, as recovery efforts continue, officials throughout the state are looking at how agencies performed. Tonight, we're asking some of them, and you, to grade Hawaii's response before, during, and after the storm. Joining me in the studio tonight, Honolulu Mayor Kirk Caldwell and Vern Miyagi, the Executive Officer of the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency. And on the phone, we have Maui Mayor Alan Arakawa and Hawaii County Civil Defense Administrator Daryl Oliveira joining us as well. Thanks so much for being here, all of you. I know you've been busy.
Thank you, Beth Ann. It's really nice you're hosting this event. I think it's really helpful for all of us to kind of decompress, debrief, and find out, you know, where we are and things.
Kind of what we had in mind. I'm going to start with you, Chief, because obviously the Big Island took the brunt of all of this. As you look back over the last couple of weeks, is there anything that particularly stands out in your mind that you feel went particularly well or not so well that we have yet to really talk about?
Well, I think if we look at the event as it transpired from start to where we're at currently with the warning and the notices, messaging going out to the community and recognizing we have some very challenging issues with regarding getting messages out to the community, limited communication capability in some of these areas with public radio, et cetera. So we definitely see some areas that we can make some changes going forward to ensure that all of our communities are well informed of the impending threat so they can make good decisions in a timely manner. As far as the response went, we felt that the response was very well from all the organizations involved. And you know, right through the actual impact and then into the recovery, I don't think anybody could have foreseen what kind of impact the winds and the albizias would have had. I think we all had a fair idea that the albizias pose a significant problem and risk, and that risk became a reality with the wind and what actually happened. You know, losing power to a pretty large area of the community and the number of residents that were affected by the outage, presented with other challenges as far as, you know, refrigeration, communication, just basic security. And one thing that maybe is not known to a lot of people in the state is that, you know, when you lose power in some of these areas that are on catchment water systems, that means they don't have water either because their home catchment systems are powered by, you know, electrical pumps. So when you lose power, you're losing basic amenities such as water, the ability to, again, bathe, sanitation, you know, flush your toilet, et cetera. So it's a big issue when you lose power in a region like this.
One of the clear differences this time around, as opposed to, say, when we saw Inika come through, is that we had a lot of people on Twitter talking to each other and being able to send very targeted messages to the rest of the world. Did you find that helpful?
Yes, both helpful as well as sometimes could be challenging because we want to make sure that what goes out on social media is accurate. So it's making sure that we are able to feed the social media network with information that, again, is accurate, and not only accurate for the state, but accurate for our local community. And I think it is another tool that we in emergency management agree can be very useful and effective with keeping the community informed, because so many people are turning to that type of a mechanism to get information.
Well, especially when you have nothing else, that may be your only line out. When you talk about some of it was certainly helpful, but you wanted to make sure that things that were being popped out in tweets were actually correct, real, and true. How did you assess that? And did you, you know, look, when you look at the balance of how much good it did versus maybe not so good, what would you say would be where you would peg that on that continuum?
I think overwhelmingly in this particular incident, it was good in that what information was being shared on the social media systems were accurate. And part of that is attributed to, you know, some of the staff here that come from different offices, such as our mayor's office, our Department of Water Supply. They have staff that assist us with posting things on various social media platforms to ensure that the information going out is information that we have vetted and made sure is accurate for our local residents. In previous events and incidents, we have seen, unfortunately, information that may have been erroneous because it was maybe interpreted from another source, such as somewhere else in the world or somewhere else in the country. So it's a very useful tool. I think we've seen tremendous benefit with this particular event, and we just need to make sure that we utilize it as best we can and make sure it's as effective as we can by giving accurate information out on that platform.
And while we're talking about accurate information, how would you peg recovery efforts as of today?
Things are moving very well. I know, you know, as the residents in the community would like to see things obviously move faster, but I think when we look at the extent of damage and how much has happened, as well as the effort being put forth by not just our Helco power company, but our Department of Public Works, the contractors, et cetera, the progress that has been made since the event has been substantial, recovering a lot of the power and replacing or restoring a lot of the power, as well as the opening of the roads and clearing of debris has been tremendous. And a lot of that can also be attributed to the volunteer effort that's out there. It's a huge volunteer presence, an organized as well as spontaneous volunteer effort from the community. So a lot of that is credit to the progress that's been made.
And how many customers are currently without power?
As of today, it's under 1,000 customers without power, but they are still working and trying to improve those numbers and, again, making significant progress from day one.
All right. I'm going to leave you for a second and go and speak with Mayor Alan Arakawa. Mayor, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Lillian. Pleasure.
When you look at where most of the damage was on Maui, and then certainly we've had more pictures of trees that have fallen over than probably we've seen in a very, very long time, how do you regard what could have been done to have made some of that impact a little bit less than what we saw happen? Was there anything else that could have been done that wasn't?
Pretty much what could have been done to prepare was done. We had crews stationed to be able to remove debris from the highways. We had electrical crews on standby to be able to restore electric lines. And all of our public work crews, whether it be water departments, sewer departments, they were all pretty much capable of responding.
Mayor, we're losing you a little bit. Can I just ask you to make sure that you go right into the headset so that we can hear you?
Okay, yeah. We made sure that everything was there. The response teams got out there as soon as we possibly could. Now, there's no way for us to really prepare for trees in the forest falling down on the, and the pastures falling on the, you know, fence lines and things like that. But our response team, I think, was about as well prepared as they could be. We had our hospital and ambulance service, everything, everybody was on full alert. Our police department, fire department was on full alert. We had sent many of our personnel home during the day so that when the storm hit us, they would be fresh. So they wouldn't be overly tired. We rotated a lot of our staff. Private sector, we had in our civil defense, entire network was up and running, and they were rotating as well. So pretty much what could be done was done.
And how would you assess where the progress has taken us to this point?
Well, at this point, it took just a few days for us to be able to restore power to everyone. The roadways were cleaned up within a day. Considering the number of trees that fell in Lopalakua, in the ranch land, the ranch is probably going to take a couple of months to clear all that up. But the roads are clear, the communities are taken care of, and it couldn't be much better. Right now, it's pretty much back to normal.
And waiting to see what happens with federal funds coming from FEMA, hopefully.
Well, the federal funds will definitely help us to be able to help those communities that were affected. Now, during the storm, there were a number of electrical lines that went down. There were a lot of trees that fell and blocked the roads throughout our communities. Even the areas in Makawao, Pukalani, Lahaina, that weren't hit directly with real heavy rains, suffered power outages and trees falling, but we were able to clear those up in a matter of hours. The roads were clear again for wherever there was damage. The only delay area that came in was our water treatment plant in Linda. It took a little bit of time to put the electricity back on, but water service was not disrupted because of the way we planned.
All right, stay with us. We're going to continue the conversation. If you're just joining us now, we're doing a tropical storm debrief, and we'd like to hear from you, too. Wherever you are in the state, how you experienced the tropical storm and damage potentially to your area or not, how did you regard how the state and city and county officials were able to respond to the storm before, during, and after it? Looking at where we are now, we want to hear from you as we're taking a look at the last couple of weeks after Tropical Storm Isel. Our number is 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, that's the number to call, 941-3689. And if you're on the neighbor islands, or you may be listening to the live stream from someplace else, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. All right, I'm going to bring Honolulu Mayor Kirk Caldwell into this conversation. Now, we didn't have issues with albizia trees in the way that the Big Island did, and certainly Maui, and looking at, you know, people being more concerned about rushing and getting enough water and seeing empty shelves and all of that kind of thing. But there obviously was a big concern over here, too, as it was moving through. How do you assess where we were?
Bethan, a couple points I wanted to make. When we talk about, I want to compare Oahu to the Puna district of the Big Island. Puna is so large, you could put the entire island of Oahu
right
in
there,
Puna,
right,
and have a lot of land left over. So when you think of a district devastated by the strong winds, mainly by albizia trees that are falling down, and I think when I was a little kid, right by Kapoho is a lava tree mold park, there were no albizias. You go there today, it is unbelievably choked with albizia, and it's spread throughout the Puna district, but even on this island, in the valley I live in, Manoa, where they are initially planted, and they're spreading up the ridge, and you know the seeds are blowing everywhere. We need to deal with that issue of how do we get control of our albizia trees, and how do we do it? So that's one thing. I wanted to say that I thought, as a whole, we all really performed well. Each of the four counties, the federal government, and the state government. You know, we go through this exercise, Beth Ann, on a regular basis. When we have tsunami alerts, which come about once or twice, maybe once a year or every other year. And of course, we haven't had a hurricane for over 20 years. So we do plan, and the mantra always is plan for the worst and hope for the best. You always want to have the best happen. And we dodged a bullet on Oahu for the most part. But we went through an exercise where we planned and we learned. And here are some of the things we learned. As you know, Oahu has 973,000 people on this island. It's very dense. And we have Waikiki and a huge visitor industry, 95,000 visitors right now on any given day during the summer. So as Isel was approaching, we decided we needed to cancel our bus service because you didn't want people waiting at bus stops in the middle of a potential hurricane where they get injured, and we didn't want our drivers on the road. So we said we'd cancel bus service at midnight the day before the hurricane hit Oahu. Almost immediately, we heard from the visitors saying, how are our workers going to get into Waikiki tomorrow morning to take care of the 95,000-plus visitors? And so we responded to that request. We sat down, we worked it out, and we actually implemented an express bus route service. 28 buses came in from the country, from all the way from Makaha, Ewa, Waipahu, into Waikiki. It didn't make any other stops. It came from the country right into Waikiki to get people to work so we could continue to serve our visitors and make sure during this time of crisis they were taken care of. It was a real partnership between the visitor industry, the private sector, and the city and county of Honolulu. When the all-clear sign was given at 3 o'clock on Oahu, within an hour, those buses were back in Waikiki getting the shift that had ended back home again. And it's an example of where we never did this before, and I think we learned a lot from that experience. The other thing, for the first time, we had 10 shelters, of which 5 were pet-friendly. In the past, we had 1 or 2, and many people didn't want to go without their pets, and we want them to be safe. So he said, bring your pets, bring them on the bus. We had emergency buses taking people to the 10 shelters, and we allowed them to bring their pet if they were on leash or in some kind of cage or kennel, and that worked really well. And then finally, for the first time, we had a city number, a hotline number, where people could call to get answers to non-emergency questions, emergency 911. But if they wanted to know where the shelters were, when the buses were going to start running again, any of the other issues that were non-emergency, they called this number. We got hundreds and hundreds of calls, including from the neighbor islands who couldn't, you know, get through because lines were down. We got calls from the mainland and visitors saying, should we still come? You wouldn't believe how many people called asking for fill potholes the next day. And one lady actually called saying, do you know where my husband is? So we got the full gamut of all kinds of things, but it worked very well, and that's something we're going to do again.
But that all presumes that, A, we have phone service.
Correct.
And that, you know, B, we're able to access a phone during a time of crisis. I want to bring Vern Miyagi into this conversation. You've been waiting patiently over there. And by the way, if you're thinking about calling us, call us sooner than later because we do want to hear what you have to say about how you experienced the storm and what lessons are you taking away from it. What do you think the city, county, and states should all, state also take away from our experiences? We've talked about some of the newer things that happened this time around. 941-3689 is our number, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, the whole business about phones because we became so dependent upon looking at the Twitter feed, trying to make a call maybe to the city to find out where somebody's husband was, who knows, for whatever reason. But the point being that without having one of these little devices, you might have been sunk. Is there anything afoot that you're looking at for the next time around? Because surely there will be one that won't necessarily be so dependent on having, you know, phone technology.
Well, right now I have to say that the Twitter feeds and the social media was critical in getting an idea of where people were and what was going on. As future, we need to look at the incoming technology now and see how we can leverage that with respect to the damage assessment and the calls in. I think we were lucky one of the cell towers, one of the company's cell towers was still open and operating, and we were getting feeds that way. But can I take just a couple steps back from the state level? Because at the state level, we're concerned about all four counties. And some of the good things that happened was what we trained for in Makani Pahili 14. The trigger for us in the state of Hawaii is the 140-degree longitude line. And once that happens, we start having calls to National Weather Service. We have daily updates with all of the counties on VTC, and we have the National Weather Service giving us an update on where everything is happening and what the track is. And I got to commend them because the track this year, this storm was very, very accurate. And right, it was headed to the Big Island from the beginning and went right over the Big Island through the Puna area and out to the South Kona area. The daily VTCs we had with all of the counties, the emergency managers, the mayors were always on there too, gave everybody an idea what was going on. And at the same time, we were getting an idea what the counties needed so we could get ahead of the request for assistance that they might ask for. The Makani Pahili exercise was great. When we worked, I saw the mayor on the VTCs in the morning too, and we saw all of the mayors and everybody participated. So we just had a good practice just before. I think the mayor is correct. We said in Makani Pahili, we go briefly over landfall, but we've not had an extended response time after landfall, like in Kauai, where we went for about six, 8 weeks after that. But that was a good experience, but we need to carry that forward and capitalize on that. You know, one thing I got to say about the response is the National Guard. When this thing initially happened, the calls were for some security presence, debris removal, transportation, aerial reconnaissance by the helicopters. And what's really neat is the guys that do that and the gals that do that are members of the community. They know the area. They know the people. These are the sons, daughters, moms and dads of the community. And they're helping the community, and they want to do that. And to see them engage again, first of all, I saw them in Iniki. We see them deploy in the federal active duty in wartime, and now they're coming back to help their community. It's just beautiful to see.
All of those volunteer efforts aside, we talked earlier in the week about the albizia trees and how much work is yet to be done to be able to clear. And the point was made that, you know, maybe we need to start looking at jobs for people to do this, not necessarily rely on volunteers who have limited time to give, and that these really need to be bona fide jobs. Chief, is that something that you're looking at over on the Big Island?
Yes, we actually have been meeting and discussing going forward how to mitigate the albizia issues. You know, it's such a large infestation across the island and along major travel corridors. even along areas that affect the access to the hospital. So it is something that is being looked at and worked on as we speak.
But with, I mean, it, you know, people who would be given jobs to do this, not necessarily relying on a volunteer force to do it.
Right. I guess what we're doing right now is looking at what kind of programs and funding we can get, what sources that can support an eradication or control or mitigation program, and how that may be sustained, because it goes beyond just taking trees down. It's maintaining the area where the trees are taken down, because we're seeing, as right after the event, trees being removed, we're already seeing the sprouting of new vegetation and new Albizia sprouts coming up. So there's a huge maintenance side of this as well.
And reforestation efforts.
Right.
All right, stay with us. We're going to start taking some callers at the moment. 941-3689 is our number if you'd like to join us and chime in about how you think it went during Tropical Storm Isel. Wherever you are on the island, we want to hear from you. 941-3689, 877-941-3689. Going to Donna calling us from Wailoa. Good morning. Good morning. I tell you, I don't know what time it is. Hi there. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. I appreciate that you're having this program, and what I would like to see in terms of a preventative look, and you addressed it somewhat, is the Albizia problem, specifically for homeowners, not just power lines and roadways, but also the homes, because you can clearly see them around your home, and I would like to see some county legislation for homeowners to feel protected, that they can ask their neighbors to reduce the threat and so forth, and that the county actually take more of an involvement in creating guidelines for what's safe for the homes.
A lot of people thought that Albizia trees were just fine. They're on the state's exceptional tree list. We talked about that a little earlier this week, too, and how the Outdoor Circle is looking to potentially have them removed because of all the damage that we've seen. Do you have Albizia near your home?
Yes, I do. In Kauai, ever since Aniki, they've come up in a quite massive way, and they're beautiful trees to look at, but, of course, you can see how dangerous they are. And also, it would be good to have a study to see how close you can keep them without having risk. If the limbs literally picked up and flew miles, or if it's just the tree dropped and flew, 1,000 feet, that's something like that.
So, Claire, you're asking for more information about what those trees can do, where they should be removed, and getting some help for people who have them right at home, as opposed to just in places that would impact a great number of people.
Right.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call. We'll see if
You're
we can
welcome.
Get you some of that information. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. So how did the tropical storm happen for you? What was your big concern as you looked out either on the Twitter feed or watching TV, listening to radio, looking at how the reactions of state officials, city and county officials, how all of them were working together? What was your take on this, and what do you think are the big takeaways for us to store for next time and get some practice before next time strikes? Because we all know there is going to be a next time. Now, we've heard more about Albizia trees after all of this than most people have talked about probably their
right.
whole lives. But it keeps being an issue without making it, funny at all. It's not funny when a tree falls on you, but these things, beautiful as they are, have short, shallow root systems. They're not terribly stable, and they grow, 20 feet a year?
Yeah, they can grow an inch a day. They can grow an inch a day. Bethann, I was going to ask just to Donna's question. When I was a kid, we lived along the Wailuku River in Hilo, and it filled with Albizia trees in the gulch next to our house. County property, some DOE properties by Hilo High School, actually just would go down as a teenager and ring bark the trees. They're very wet wood, and they're very heavy. They absorb a lot of water. But if you ring bark it and the tree dies, they dry out, and when they fall, they don't do as much damage as a more brittle type of wood. I think Donna's question, it's not so much, in my experience, it's not neighbors planting Albizia trees because they're worried about the branches falling on their own houses. But it's what happens on government property, state or county, as was mentioned by the fire chief. They grow on roads, county roads, up to the hospital, Hilo Hospital, those kind of things. And I think we all have to take a more active role in getting rid of them, bring Barkingham, and the smaller ones are very easy to pull out because the roots are shallow. And when they're trees but not large, you know, one hack with a machete, you can cut right through them. They're very
but
soft
wood. But she's worried about neighbors who may have them and may not be able to remove them. And clearly looking at what do we do in neighborhoods where we see these trees
so
now.
So I was going to say under state law, if you have a tree that's branches hanging into your property, you have a right to cut that branch. You can't make the owner cut down the tree. This is under HRS sections. But you can remove anything that hangs into your side of the property. The scary thing is when an albizu tree is 150 feet in the air, it may be on their property, but should it blow over, it ends up in theirs. So I think that is an issue that state legislatures need to take up to look at what else can you do to get someone to take action that's not on your property but on other private property.
And
as you know, cutting these trees down are expensive. These are huge trees. You can have giant trunks. And they go 150 feet. You're spending $10,000-$15,000 to remove one tree,
which may be
and
why
many
a lot of
people don't
haven't
want to
done
do it.
It. Right?
Yeah, they don't want to spend the money.
All right, we've got callers coming in. We want to hear from you too. What's your debrief takeaway about Hurricane Isel, which became Tropical Storm Isel by the time it made landfall? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Kim, calling us from Kaimuki. Aloha, Kim.
Hi. How are you?
Well, thank you.
I've been following this conversation about albizia, and I don't know if your group is aware of it, but there's a company that's in Koloa, a tree farm that's actually growing albizia and chipping it and using it for biomass to create fuel, and also the California grass that's growing underneath the albizia, they've found to be very high in protein level, and they're harvesting that and creating pellets for animal feed. So they found a way to make it a commercially viable product, and it's seemingly quite successful. You know, you could turn a weed into a crop and in the process
make a profit.
Instead of spending $10,000 removing the tree, you make money off of it.
Thanks very much for that piece of information. A lot of people may find that a very attractive offer. Want to go back now to Maui Mayor Alan Arakawa. Mayor, we've talked about how the Big Island really shouldered the brunt of the storm. And is there a concern at all on Maui that somehow that'll always be the case?
Quite the contrary. We actually thought that the hurricanes would come right through past the Big Island and hit us directly. So all of our preparedness was geared for the hurricanes to come directly to us. All the predictions prior to the actual arrival of the hurricane were showing a direct hit. Now, one of the things I think that we're very, very happy with is that we do have time because of the new technology to be able to study the storms and to track them for about a week before they actually become dangerous to us. And that allows us to be able to warn our citizens and to be able to get the preparedness kits ready and actually have people off the streets during the highest impact. And that really is one of the safety factors that help us tremendously. Now, the Big Island, we're very grateful that Billy Kanoi and has grown two mountains that protect Maui, and we want to thank him profusely for that. But that may or may not happen during the next hurricane, so we have to be prepared.
Good attitude. But for people on Oahu, you know, when, for example, Mayor Caldwell, we've never taken a direct hit from a hurricane or a storm, which is greatly concerning to a lot of people, or thinking that we don't really even have a plan. If there were to be, heaven forbid, a Category 4 move through Waikiki, what would that mean? Are we complacent?
I don't think we're complacent, Beth Ann. I mean, there is great concern as Mayor Allen talks about, you know, the Big Island Mountains, but he has a big one, too, in Haleakala. And these mountains can wreak havoc with a hurricane because of the it shears off the high-altitude winds and weakens it. We don't have those kind of mountain masses on Oahu. And as you remember with the Niki, it looked like it was going to take a direct hit on Oahu. The day before, there's a picture in the paper, and it's like, wow. And then at the last minute, veered north and hit Kauai. And Kauai was devastated, and it took all the other islands helping our sister county get back on its feet. But can you imagine if Iniki would have taken a direct hit or another one on Oahu, where we have two-thirds of the population? We're going to need everyone else's help. And so that is a great concern. We are prepared. You know, we plan and we prepare for the worst and hope for the best. But if the worst happens, that's where we're going to be tested, because we've never been tested to actually then roll out on the disaster aspect of it, assessing damage and clearing roads. I think we're ready, but you never know until you're tested. And that's why these practices that we go through are extremely important. I feel comfortable looking at the City Facilities Division of Facility Maintenance, Design and Construction, Board of Water Supply. They all have their guys ready to go. And this is what we did this time, Bethan. We were working with the state the day before. They came over to our EOC, the guys who have the big equipment, and we agreed we'd work together. If we had to clear H1, the county wouldn't say, well, that's a state highway, we won't go and help. And the state said, if you have to clear a county road, we'll come help. And we're going to just go out by area from our yards and help each other. That's the first. And I think this is a model we need to follow. It's not about, hey, silos. It's about teamwork, working together, and sharing in the burden, the expense, and the efforts to help each other.
Let me ask you about this, though. Earlier this month, Civil Beat put out a story that Hawaii lacks hurricane emergency plan for Waikiki and for the neighbor islands. Is that so, Vern?
Well, I think we're talking about, I'm not familiar with that article, but as the mayor said, we work with each other to plan out the response, the preparation and response. In fact, right now we have, there is an RCPG grant from FEMA that is working with all of the counties in updating their hurricane plans. And at the same time, we also have another update going on for the state catastrophic plan. So Waikiki is a critical area of that, and I'm sure we have to focus on that. The high-density area in Waikiki is one of the critical parts that we have to focus on, and these two plans are updating it to consider that. But again, when you talk about Waikiki and a hurricane, let's say a Cat 4, you know, we're talking about a tremendous impact. So we can plan for it, but the key idea is to get the damage assessments quickly, find out where the damage is, and get the resources in there. And if we have a gap in the resource, we have to identify where we can get it.
And what about getting people out? I mean, you're going to have some warning in there, but really right. Having a plan to be able to get those people who are in Waikiki and highly densely populated areas.
That's correct.
Away from the coast.
Well, that comes in the evacuation plans. And again, we're lucky in a hurricane. When I say lucky, I use that hesitatingly, because we have some time. The 140-degree line trigger is our trigger. So that's when the county, working with the county to get the evacuation underway. And the county has already identified evacuation sites so that the people could collect there while the hurricane passes.
Everyone's going to be remembering that 140 line trigger spot now.
Please,
Bethan,
yes.
I did want to respond. I read the Civil Beat story, and I was actually there with the person who gave the information, and he was very upset when he saw the story because he thought it was misinterpreted what he said. And in fact, he contacted them after the fact to explain that there are plans for every resort area. Why would we not plan to take care of 95,000 people in our number one economic driver? And here to the point, during this whole event, Mike McCartney, the head of the Tourism Authority, George Segetti, who's head of the Visitor Bureau, was down in our EOC. They have their own EOC at the Convention Center, and there is communication back and forth. They're on. When we talked about all the mayors, the federal government and the state government, they were in the room too, talking. And the plan is to shelter our visitors in place, at higher floors if we have sea level surge, away from windows. The hotels each have their own disaster plans to respond. And, of course, you saw the county with the buses getting people in to help, and we'd get the people out afterwards. So I don't want people to think that somehow we just closed our eyes and said, oh, visitors, do we have to worry about them? We absolutely do.
Well,
we have
plans in place.
Well, it seems
counterintuitive to think that we would.
Yeah. We have things in place, and we work on it all the time to get it better.
There are even plans for when tour buses are outside of the hotels, so they're touring around the island, and they're not in their hotels. There are plans for the tour buses of where they can go for shelter until it passes. So that's for both tsunamis and long-term hurricanes. So these plans are ongoing.
All right. Ongoing also are the amount of calls we have coming
in a little bit.
Go ahead.
I think it's also important for everyone to realize that this is statewide. All the outer islands, our visitor industries are part of our emergency system. So each hotel, they're all connected in the communication system. So we can take care of all of the different tourists that are in, and we do plan for that action in case of an emergency. So whoever is saying that we don't have plans is absolutely wrong. Now, can we have better, can we plan for absolutely everything? No. But for the vast majority of what would be emergency situations that we would see, we do have plans, and we're trying to make them better every time. So the
which is kind of why we're having this conversation, too. And for those who may just be joining us tonight, we are talking with Maui Mayor Alan Arakawa, Hawaii County Civil Defense Administrator Daryl Oliveira on the phone, and in the studio with me, Honolulu Mayor Kirk Caldwell and Vern Miyagi, the Executive Officer of the Hawaii Emergency Management Agency. And you, too, if you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. What real lessons do you see from what we all experienced a little less than 2 weeks ago, and what are we going to carry with us in the future to, as we just heard, make the plan even better? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Aaron calling us from Kalapana. Aloha, Aaron. Thank you for your patience.
Hey, Beth Ann, thanks so much for having this conversation, and thank you, many mayors, for, you know, your interest in being prepared. Listen, I'm a resident of Lower Puna, and I've been looking at these albizia trees in this area for a long time, seeing them as time bombs, and it went off. And I know that, you know, in a larger event, you know, we have to deal with other things, but in these smaller events, the albizias have really been the cause of millions of dollars of damage to this area. And I was wondering, very specifically, it will not work to cut them down. It would be $1 trillion to cut down all the albizia trees, and they'll just grow back. From personal experience, they do it, and they grow rapidly. So, I mean, I want to just ask anybody, the University of Hawaii, is anybody involved, the Department of Agriculture, in a biological control?
Well,
they
need
to be eliminated.
Let me interrupt you just for a second, because earlier this week we talked with Springer Kay from the Big Islands Invasive Species of Committee, and she was saying that, you know, the way to do it is to use an herbicide, and it takes a couple of cuts in the tree. The herbicide is deposited, and then it sort of withers from there over time. And no, they don't fall over, but they stop producing, and that becomes a control mechanism. That's what she said on the program. You might want to go back to earlier this week and pull up the archive on HPR2 for the conversation to hear some of what she had
Lillian,
to say.
Lillian, if I may.
Actually, I'm Beth Ann. I think
Beth Ann. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
If I may, one of the biggest challenges that we have is invasive species. And one of the weaknesses of the state of Hawaii is how they react to invasive species. So this is going to be an ongoing problem because economically the state has always been very, very slow in reacting to invasive species, which is why we have major challenges with a lot of these types of programs. Now, instead of having, you know, millions of dollars worth of problems, we end up with billions of dollars of problems because we react too slowly. And we're here on Maui, you know, we actually have an invasive species group. And the county of Maui puts money into taking care of a lot of these areas, but the state needs to really step up its action. And I don't believe that will happen in our lifetimes because they've allowed a lot of these situations to spread to the point where economically it's not feasible to be able to address them.
That seems awfully depressing to stop and to consider. Vern, weigh in on this a little bit, please, because obviously, eradicating them is not going to happen when you talk about the albizia trees, but to do something to control them, when we talked to Springer Kay, her point was, look, we're going to really need some legislative help from folks on Oahu because that's where a lot of power will be. And if we can understand how much this costs us as a state to have to cope with some of these things when it happens, why not handle it when it's a little smaller problem, when you can go out there and look over time and deposit herbicide and not wait for those trees to come down during a disaster?
You know, I think we've kind of struggled with this also. I'm not a legislator or a very involved with the legislative side, but I know there was an Act 76 passed years ago, and this allowed us to try to do some mitigation methods. And we responded to calls in from the public, And our actions were to identify the owner of the property in which the dangerous foliage was located, contact him, send him letters on behalf of the complainant, and try to get him to either cut down the tree or remove it. And over the past few years, when that thing was in effect, we had some good results as far as people cutting down the trees. But again, it's very difficult. And I think the Big Island is familiar with the difficulties in the sense that we can't get a hold of the landowner. There are multiple landowners. The property is abandoned, and we can't do anything about it, basically, on that. Now, this past year, I'm not sure what the bill number was or the law number was. I think $2 million was appropriated by the legislature to assist in this. And we have to start planning on that right now. And that's where we are, really, right now. But again, I totally agree with the mayor of Mayor Carl. We have to focus on this because Albizia trees, we just had a very, very eye-opening experience here, and it is a definite danger to all of us, the whole state.
All right, we're going to go back and hear from some of our callers. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open. We do want to hear from you, 941-3689-877-941-3689. As we all went through the experience together a few weeks ago, surely you have a tale to tell, something that you feel that the rest of us might need to pay attention to, whether you're watching the Twitter feed and seeing some of the information passed through there, or just what you experienced when you tried to find water. We want to hear what you think we should plan to do better next time around. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Cyrus, calling us from Waimea. Aloha, Cyrus. Thanks for your patience.
Aloha, I'm honored.
Cyrus, you got to turn down your radio, otherwise we can't hear you. We're getting a lot of back feed. If you turn down your radio, then we'll just be able to hear just you.
Is that better?
Much better, thank you.
Okay. I'm honored to be a part of your program, and it's a very thought-provoking, and you have some very educated people on the show, not just the callers, but you have the mayor and some other people. And so there's a lot of subjects that just came to mind since I even called in. First, I do want to say I've lived here my whole life, and I think this is the third hurricane that I've been through. I know that we had Iniki really hit Kauai, so it didn't affect the Big Island, but Hurricane Eva hit pretty good at Kauai Harbor, and it destroyed one of our koa canoes. And then there was a sense of urgency and panic I went through before this was potentially going to hit Waimea. So I was at Home Depot buying plywood, and I bought the last six sheets before the next truckload came in. I went home and, screwed plywood to my windows and tried to look at the trees that would potentially fall. And I think overall the state was very lucky. I think we need to count our blessings that it wasn't worse. And I do feel for the people of Puna. I grew up down in Kalapana. But there's some interesting topics. One caller, I think it was three callers ago, talked about maybe in Kaloa, which would be on Kauai, there's a farm that's using Albizia for biomass and the grass that grows below it. Is that correct?
Are you asking?
Okay. My thought on that.
No, I think that came from, you're right. That was a caller three. That would think it was Kim calling us from Kaimuki who said that.
Okay. From Puna to cut albizias, truck them to the Hilo Harbor and ship them to Kaloa would be just an outrageous expense. There's a lot of albizias. And then someone else talked about the potential of, a show earlier, you had somebody talking about the invasive species where we cut them down and poison them, which is great. And I'm not really against pesticides, but I'm against it being close to me. So there's a lot of people, especially in Puna area, who are green and kind of alternative energies, who would be against that? I do know that the albizia grows super fast, and if you cut it, it grows back.
Well, and that's part of the point. Cyrus, thanks very much for calling us, and glad you're okay and you kept everything well under wraps as best you could. Thanks very much for the call. We're going to go off now to Lucy calling us from Aiea. Aloha, Lucy. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, Beth Ann. I heard earlier on the program about they were talking about plans, and I know that the city has plans, and it goes all the way down to the community. I think it's a matter of educating the public more, because I got involved with the CR, well, if the community emergency response program or team. And basically, that's how I learned how the community as a whole from that lower level can be more active in their own property, you know, protection.
And collectively as a community to be able to educate itself. I know Eva Beach does that. I think they're getting ready to have their preparedness fair early in September. So you're right. And maybe that goes back to a more basic question. Is there sort of a PR opportunity here to really get the word out in a way that we haven't heard it before? Because it's like your doctor telling you you need to lose weight and exercise. You hear it so many times, you just don't hear it anymore. It turns into white noise until something happens and you realize you better take it well in hand. Well, we had something happen, and we'll see how long our attention span really is in focusing on what we need to do.
Bethann, I wanted to respond to Lucy. You're absolutely right. Different small neighborhoods like Manoa, where I live, they're having a disaster fair coming in September. And they've really worked well together. And the entire valley has teams in place to help each other, helping neighbors. And one thing that I tried to say as the mayor for Oahu is, this is about self-empowerment. You can't look to government to take care of everything for you. You need enough supplies to shelter in place for 7 days, trying to take care of yourself as well as government responds to the most needed areas to take care of. And so people need to educate themselves on that. But they also need to do this, Bethann. And we saw some very bad action where people bought case upon case upon case of water. You know, 40 cases of water from Costco, meaning their neighbors and friends couldn't get any. They don't need that much water. When we talk about water, we're talking about putting it in a bathtub or buckets to use to flush your toilet, not to drink. You don't need that much. So it's how does a community balance the response family by family so we can leave other water for others? And then how do we take care of ourselves who can then also take care of our neighbors? Well, government responds to the albizia trees and all these
other things. The water issue was kind of all over Twitter, that people were really, really annoyed. And some people were actually walking up to folks and saying, hey, do you need all that water? Now, in some cases, you had one person who was designated to be buying for a lot of people. So,
that's
you know,
okay.
You don't want to be, you know, looking at somebody and giving them the fisheye thinking they're doing something bad.
Right.
But really getting the point out that if you are buying for a lot of people, that's one thing. If you're buying just to hoard, that's something else. And maybe you ought to consider not doing that and leaving some for friends and neighbors. Going now to Steve calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Steve. Welcome to Town Square.
Yes,
thanks.
Hi. Steve, I work with albizia trees a lot. I understand what you're saying, and the situation is really bad. But I just want to emphasize where you're talking about herbiciding them and killing them is fine on the young ones, but there's nothing more dangerous than trying to take down a dead albizia over a house.
Okay, so what happens with it over a house? Because we have people calling us saying, you know, what am I going to do?
Well, taking them down when they're alive, they're predictable for the person who's climbing the tree, and he can cut and rope things down or whatever he has to do. But if the tree is dead, it's totally unpredictable, and cutting and any cuts they make or even climbing up a dead tree is really dangerous. So absolutely poisoning smaller trees and seedlings and ones that where they fail or ones out in the mountains and all these other areas, I 100% agree with, but I am really concerned about homeowners or other people poisoning trees in their backyard or on slopes, and then the tree dies, and then the potential of that tree failing is imminent, and there's not going to be too many contractors that are going to be willing to stake someone's life to climb that tree.
Steve, I'm really glad you called. Thanks very much for that. I mean, it kind of goes back to the idea of what kind of concerted efforts are going to happen within communities and neighborhoods where these trees are. This isn't about where they are along stretches of power lines or out where a lot of people aren't living, but what happens with neighbor by neighbor when you know those albizia trees are there. That's going to be a real problem. Go ahead.
Can I interject
please.
A new topic just we run out of time. One of my major concerns, especially if Oahu gets hit, is most of the major medical facilities in the state are located on Oahu. And we talked for quite some time about building a secondary medical center on Maui or one of the neighbor islands, primarily Maui in the discussion. I think the state really needs to start working very hard to try and establish a second medical center, because if Oahu gets hit really hard, there's no place to evacuate critically ill patients off of Oahu if the situation occurs.
To say nothing of being able to treat those people who are on Maui on a day-to-day basis as well. Okay,
right.
Thank you for bringing up that point. We're going to go off now to Carl calling us from Puna. Good to hear from Puna. Aloha, Carl.
Hi, thank you so much for your wonderful show.
A pleasure, thank you.
Well, I was here last week, 1 week ago, it's hard to believe, and I spent the night in my house instead of trying to go for a shelter. And it sounded like a war outside. There was like, sounded like cannons and guns going off and everything hitting the house. And I was too afraid to open the door, but I just sat and prayed until about 4 a.m. it slowed down. And I fell asleep. Woke up a few hours later, and when I opened the door, I couldn't believe it. Every bit of the ground is covered with trees, branches, and debris, except for my house, 8 feet away. And this is one point I wanted to make. There was ironwood trees, which basically fall over pretty easy. They have no taproot. And the ironwood trees fell over and missed my house by about 8 feet, so I'm so lucky to be alive. And the winds, I'm estimating, were 80 miles an hour. My roof would have been torn off, but I just recently put hurricane straps on there on a whim, thank goodness. But
well,
it was shook
well,
up
Carl,
enough
Carl,
to where it
can
beat.
You, can I stop you there for a second? Because you said
yes,
you'd recently
please.
Put, you know, you made some plans for a hurricane. And fortunate for you that it seemed to coincide with the one that, at least a tropical storm we had blow through. Are you more inclined now to do more preparation work because of what we've just experienced?
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to, I feel like I did good preparation, but I'm right by the ocean, and I've been trying to cut the ironwoods down here for years and years because they kill all the Hawaiian species underneath. They take over, they become a monopoly, and many other things. But they have some good sides, too, not to just say it's totally negative. But I want to take them all out because any one of them could crush my entire house. You know, they're very heavy, very hard wood. And so I just have to go through the DLNR and make sure they're okay with it. They're over 6 inches in diameter.
Carl, how close is your nearest neighbor?
I'm pretty far, actually, from my nearest neighbor. There's no, nothing, like, you couldn't yell and be heard by the nearest neighbor.
Well, we're glad that you're really okay. I mean, it's obviously being able to talk to you and hear what you saw when you walked out your front door and to know that you got lucky, at least your house wasn't crushed, although I'm sure you have many friends and neighbors who weren't as lucky. Thanks very much for calling.
The house was shifted. I have these metal attachments under my house that attach the house to the beams underneath, and those were torqued like about 3/4 of an inch. So I'm feeling like I have to rebuild from the beams up. I mean,
and do you have a suggestion for anybody else who is maybe either in your situation or dealing with having to build from scratch? Is there something that you would suggest that they definitely build into a structure?
Well, yeah, the hurricane strapping. I saw a house that's a much bigger house than mine down in Hawaiian Shores, and nearly the entire roof was blown off, partly due to the fact they had the roof overhanging a porch, and I imagine that caught the power of the wind. But I don't think they must have had a hurricane strap, but if they did, I guess it wasn't big enough, you know.
Okay, I got to cut this short just a little bit because we have to say goodbye in a moment. But very, very quickly, how much did that cost you?
Oh, I have no idea. I mean, it's going to be thousands. I just have to, you know, I'm filling out paperwork to try and get a little help. But, you know, I wanted to talk about the ironwoods up the road.
I wish we had time for that, but we're going to have to say goodbye for the moment because the show's going to end in a few minutes. Thanks very much for the call. Really glad you're doing well and okay. I just want to go right round with all of my guests tonight and just say if you had to put one thing out there that you think that we really need to focus on for the next time we have an activity like this that will pull us all together and hopefully not send too many houses far apart, what is it that you'd like to see us focus on? And Chief, I want to start with you.
Sure. I think a lot of the points were hit with individual preparedness, everything from what an individual, a family, a community or neighborhood can do to be better prepared, because as we saw with this event, isolation is going to be a challenge if communities are isolated. So what each one of us can do as individuals in the community to be better prepared, along with our families, will make it that much easier to channel the resources that will be taxed to those that are truly in need.
Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Going now to Maui Mayor Alan Arakawa.
Well, I think that the best thing people can do is not get complacent about the warnings that are happening. You know, but when we had the last tidal wave, people were actually at the beach trying to see the wave.
And then we even had somebody who went swimming.
And yeah, and so people have to realize that that's how people die, by not heeding these warnings and being prepared. As Mayor Caldwell has stated a number of times, you know, have a seven-day supply to make sure that you can exist in your residence for 7 days. Just because it may take time to be able to dig you out in case of a major catastrophe.
Thanks so much for making time and for being with us tonight. Look forward to talking to you soon, Mayor Caldwell.
Bethann, we need to really ramp up our efforts on FirstNet, which is a federal effort here that would connect all communities during times of emergencies, both national and local. It would be a secure broadband network that if we lost our cell towers and ours, we could still communicate with our first responders and each of our counties in government. And for me, that's something I want to see happen sooner than later. We had a conference over on Kauai and Bernard's home island, and everyone attended, and I think it was a good exercise about what we need to do more of to get this FirstNet network up and running for the state of Hawaii and connecting all the counties. I do want to mention one thing. You know, the sister counties all got together. We called Billy Kanoi 2 days after the hurricane or after the storm, asked him what he needed. He asked for water and ice. Each of the mayors, Mayor Allen, Mayor Bernard, me, we all sent tons of water, and even Mayor Allen sent ice to help our sister county, and it made a big difference. That's another example of us all coming together.
And before I let you go, though, I mean, when we heard from Mayor Allen just a moment ago saying, hey, we don't want to be complacent, there are going to be a lot of people who will say, hey, this just happened, and chances are we're not going to have another one. Even though we're in an El Nino year and we have storms that are already being tracked, Vern Miyagi, give us just really a kick in the pants so that we don't become as complacent and as potentially at risk as we could be.
Well, keep an eye on the news. They always form off the Baja Peninsula on the east. But my last comment would be, know your neighbor, know the people on your street, know where the elderly are, know who doesn't take care of themselves, and get together and know them so that you know what their needs are and how you guys can prepare together. And the last thing is that emergency prep kit that the mayor talked about for 7 days, get that going, because especially during hurricane season, June through November, that's what you need.
And pay attention to that 140 line.
Yes.
Thank you all so very much for joining us tonight. Mayor Kirk Caldwell here. Let me try that again. Mayor Kirk Caldwell here with me in the studio. Also, Vern Miyagi here. Thank you so much for making time and coming in. And on the phone, Mayor Alan Arakawa and Chief Daryl Oliveira over on the Big Island. And you too. Hope you get your things together. Let us know if you actually do get your kits together. And we can all hopefully buoy each other, because we've got a long way to go until November. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. I'll see you here tomorrow morning for The Conversation. Have yourselves a good evening. Aloha.